I hope I'm thankful that I've been given this opportunity to come and speak to you this morning, but I feel the need of the Lord's help this morning. I need your prayers, and my prayer is that the Lord, in spite of my inabilities, will bless each one of you as he can and knows, bless each one of you with things that each one of you stand individually in need of. I know most people here, but I don't know what you stand in need of, but the Lord does, and he has the ability to use his word to bless each one of you individually, and that's my prayer if he would do so. This afternoon is our, after lunch later this afternoon, is our annual communion service, and that's on my mind, and I realize I've been thinking about it lately, and I hadn't spoken on it in a number of years. I think last time I really spoke on it was 10 years ago in this pulpit, and so that's been on my mind, and it made me think of it more this last week as I travel and go about the radio, listening to the radio. It used to irritate me when I was riding with my dad. Irritate is not a good word, but it used to bother me when I would ride with my dad when my mother got sick, and I would ride my dad and help drive for him. Well, I was a teenager then, or 18, 19, 20 years old, and of course my taste in radio music was different than his taste, and when I would drive for him, well, he would always go and turn to these radio preachers, which I just couldn't hardly stand, but he'd listen to them and argue with them, of course, on the radio. He would argue with them, and I'd go, why don't we go to listen to some music we don't have to argue with? I have learned, though, that I have become my dad, and as I drive, I find myself listening to those same preachers now and arguing with them on the radio and thinking you were doing real good till you got up to that last point and you blew it. So that's on my mind. I heard a discussion this last week about all the movies that come out from time to time, and we've got a couple out now about the Young Messiah and the movie called Risen, you know, and we've discussed those briefly, and on one of our Wednesday night discussions, I discussed with you some of the things that were in those and the flaws about them and my general feeling about them. And I have some appreciation for the people who want to help educate people about Christ. I have some appreciation to that. Of course, generally they take an Arminian approach, and it ends up you helping teach you what you need to do to get yourself saved. And as we know, the Lord took care of that a long time ago before the foundation of the world. We have no role in that at all. The Lord is our Savior. He's the one that does all the work. His death on the cross, and especially his resurrection, defeated death for all of those who he chose before the foundation of the world. But there are a lot of blessings that we get in this world. We get a lot of salvation in this world. We're talking about salvation from the problems and cares of this world that we receive. And the Bible, in fact, many times, most of the time, I would say probably, uses the word saved and salvation. It's not talking about your eternal salvation. Again, that was established, but it's talking about our salvation and the blessings that we get from serving him and following him and doing the best that we can to do works of righteousness. We should try to persevere, even though I fail at it miserably, and most of us, I feel, do. And we've got examples in the Bible of some great men who did not persevere in works of righteousness, but yet we know they were all children of God, and we all get blessings from that when we do try to. The one thing that I heard that got me thinking this week was they were discussing some of the movies that have been out recently and some of the old ones, and they were talking about generally they approve of those because those help people to remember the Lord. They provide a way, lest we forget, they help us remember, everybody who goes to movies, it's a way of helping them remember what the Lord did for them. The thing I want to talk to you about this morning is we have a way to remember what the Lord did for us. He's provided that to us regardless of whether there's any movies or not and the accuracy or inaccuracy of which they portray what the biblical events. We have a way to remember what the Lord has done for us. And it was given to us by the Lord. He gives us specifically, and I want to go to the one in the book of Corinthians, start with that. I want to talk to you today about our communion service, the bread and wine service, the communion service, and then also I'll probably focus a little bit more time on the feet washing service since it's pretty unique. Among the churches that deserve communion service, nearly all of them we know of have a communion service in which they serve the bread and the wine. Very, very few have feet washing service. We'll talk a little bit more about that, but you know, even in this town today, the people that have communion service, you can count the number that have foot washing service on one hand, and you can use my hand. It's pretty thin, so I want to focus a little bit on that in a minute and the foundation for that. But let's start off with 1 Corinthians chapter 11, beginning it's about 18 through about 30. I'll just kind of summarize this, though. But this is where the Apostle Paul summarizes the Lord's Supper, the communion service that we'll observe this afternoon. And he said, first of all, when you come together as a church, this is when we observe this as in a church capacity, even though I know there's been communion services outside and there's been feet washing even among old Baptists when you go out and visit someone who's sick. We do it in a capacity as a church. Apostle Paul gives us a good lesson here, and I'll leave it up to you to read the majority of that. He gives a good lesson about people that participate in the service. Do it in remembrance of him, but you also do it in a capacity of that you're worthy to participate in it. Now, none of us are worthy, we know, for our eternal salvation, but we don't participate it in unworthily. We have a duty to make sure that those that participate are worthy to participate, and each of us individually then has a duty to make sure that we individually don't participate it if we do so unworthily. Our only test for that we can do is church membership, because we do have certain limitations, and Apostle Paul addresses some of those over in 1 Corinthians, fifth chapter of 1 Corinthians. He talks about a member of the Corinthian church that was difficulty, and the church needs to purge that person from their membership. And then in 2 Corinthians, he comes back and says, now, that person that I told you to purge, I think he's suffered enough, he's repented, it may be time for the church to look and bring him back into the church. So there's a worthiness test there, and the Apostle Paul addresses that, and that's what we have to look to that he covers here. But more particularly, what I wanted to say was this, when he says, when they come together here, I'll skip to verse 23, that the Lord, the same night in which he was betrayed, took bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it and said, take, eat, this is my body. The bread that we eat, the unleavened bread that we'll eat, partake of later this afternoon, he says that represents his body. He sacrificed his body for us. This represents my body, which is broken for you. This do in remembrance of me. He gives us a specific, what we can refer to as an ordinance of the church, a specific ordinance of the church to do specifically to remember him. And that's why we do this today. I mean, that's why he's installed this in the church, is so that we have a specific service to do specifically in remembrance of him. Now, you know, even in doing that, even in all the churches that have the bread and wine service, there's still a vast minority of people who observe this service. The people that attend church, people that take communion, there's still a vast minority do this. There'll be more, I speculate, and I don't know the numbers, but I know there'll be more people see the movies than will participate in this service. And this is a specific way the Lord has given us to remember him. Verse 25, after the same manner also he took the cup when he had supped, saying, this cup is the New Testament in my blood. This is the wine service. This cup is the New Testament in my blood. This do ye as oft as ye drink it in remembrance of me. He has given us a way to remember. Very specifically, there's really not much interpretation, a difference of interpretation on how this is to work, other than who's to participate. Other than that, but the bread and the wine is observed very broadly and very widely. And I won't spend as much time on it because I want to get on to the feet washing service, but he gives us a very specific way we are to remember him. And we should do that, and we should do it on some sort of regular basis. We do ours, of course, twice a year, in April and again late in the fall. We participate here. But he has given us this specific way. This is the way we ought to. Now, there's other ways to do it. You ought to read your Bible. You ought to come to church. There's all sorts of other things. But he's given us this very specific way that we do it, and we do it for the purpose, do this in remembrance of me. In fact, I believe we've got that. That's carved on the front of our communion table, as they call it down here. So that's the first thing that we tell. Of course, and again, as many people as even will observe this communion, it'll still be a minority, and I think even a vast minority of those people who will go see the movies that are done specifically so that we'll remember him. But he's given us this specific service as a way of remembering him. All four Gospels cover this service. First three Gospels cover it specifically. Matthew in chapter 26, Mark in 14, I believe in Luke in chapter 22, talks about this service in which he specifically goes and sits, and we'll talk a little bit about that in this afternoon as we go through that service. But the bread and wine service are covered, and everybody participates in those. I don't know of a church that does not have some sort of communion service. So y'all are familiar with that, but I wanted to point out that this is the service we are to do in remembrance of him. More specifically, if you'll turn back, though, to what I also want to visit with you, and that's the foot washing service. Go back to chapter 13 of John. The book of John, and I want to go through and talk about several things in this. Many of you have heard this, but like I said, it's been about 10 years since I've spoken on it, and I felt a desire to speak to you again. Chapter 13 of the book of John is where we find the example that the Lord gives us of the foot washing service. And I'd like to talk about it a little bit. And he says, begin chapter 13 with, "Now before the feast of the Passover." This took place before the feast of the Passover. This is one of the national Sabbaths they took, a yearly Sabbath, different than the Sabbath that occurs at the end of the week, beginning Friday at sunset and Saturday, which was the end of the week, their Sabbath service as we knew it, as they knew it, before when he arose on the first day of the week, we changed our observance of worship to the first day of the week rather than the last day of the week. But this is talking about the Feast of the Passover. So a lot of people will tell you that this supper, Last Supper, took place on Friday. I don't believe it did. I'm going to suggest, and y'all have heard me talk about this from time to time, this supper actually took place on, in my opinion, like on Tuesday night, something Monday night or Tuesday night. It's not perfectly clear that it's the exact same supper as the Last Supper, but I believe it coincides with it, so I don't see that being a major issue. But it was before the Feast of the Passover, which it would have been earlier in the week than the Sabbath, or the Saturday Sabbath. "When Jesus knew that his hour was come, that he should depart out of this world unto the Father, having loved his own, which were in the world, he loved them unto the end. And supper being ended," we'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute, but I think that's also important to understanding what's taking place here. Supper was over. They had finished eating. "The devil, having now put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things unto his hands, and he was come from God and went to God." We have a statement here that Jesus clearly is God, comes from God, and goes back to God. We have a three-in-one God we know that we believe in, Father, the Son, the Holy Ghost, all three are one. It's just manifested in three different manners. We have Jesus, the Son of God, being manifested here, playing in the role of a man, but he is expressing very clearly he is part of the Godhead. He's come from God, and he's going back to God. "He rises from supper, and he laid aside his garments." You know, we all wear garments every day. From time to time, we all wear our uniforms, our garments. We wear, you know me, I wear a coat and tie most days, not every day, but most days I wear a coat and tie to my office. We all wear different garments to work. The kings always had the robes. They always had the outer garment, the robes, the cape. Y'all heard Brother Mark Richards speak on this several years ago when he was our speaker at our annual meeting, and he talked specifically about this phrase about Jesus. This is very symbolic here that Jesus took off his garments, took off his coat, his robe as the king, and laid it aside in order to wash the feet of his people. You see, that ought to have been the other way around. We ought to be washing the king's feet, not the king washing our feet. But he took off his robely outer garment and laid it aside so that he could wash the feet of his saints. He laid down the robe of the king. He became the servant rather than the king in this capacity. It's a good example for us, and that's what part of this is about. Again, if you notice, we talked about the bread and the wine being done in remembrance of him. This is a different service. This is for us, with each other. You know, it's over there in the, I believe it's in the book of Matthew, when the lawyer was questioning Christ about what's the greatest commandments. He was a Pharisee, and the Pharisees had some 600 laws, and they had to divide them. They had so many laws they couldn't follow them all, and they had the important laws and the major laws and the minor laws. The major laws you had to follow, the minor laws you had to do the best you could. So there was always a debate about which ones were major, which ones were minor, which ones you have to follow all the time. And so this lawyer came to Christ and says, what's the greatest commandment? Let's get these in the right priority. Of course, and Christ said, well, of all the prophets, all those laws, there's only really two. Out of those 600 that y'all try to follow, there's only two, and if you follow them, you're doing well. He said, number one, love the Lord with all your heart, all your mind, and all your soul. That is manifested in the communion service, the bread and wine. That's what we're doing, is remembering the Lord and loving him for what he did for us. He said, and second, the commandment is love thy neighbor as thyself. On all these two commandments, all the law of all the prophet hangs on these two commandments. This is what the feet washing service is about, is that second part, loving your neighbor as yourself. These two commandments are tied directly to the two services we'll have this afternoon, the ordinance of communion, and then the what I will call just the service of the feet washing service. It's not an ordinance of the church, and I'll discuss that more in a minute. But we have Christ rising from supper, laying aside his garments. This is a very simple procedure that we try to follow here in the church. You'll see that, you know, the men and ladies even sometimes will take off their outer coat, their outer garment, in the same manner that Christ did, laid aside his garment, took a towel, and girded himself. After that, he poureth water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel wherewith he was girded. Some basic things he did. He started washing the disciples' feet, going around the room and washing their disciples' feet. We have a lot of people that will tell us about, well, even you guys, even the old Baptists will admit this is not an ordinance of the church. This is something that is done not to remember him, but for our service to each other. This is part of our learning to love each other as we love ourselves. The two basic commandments Christ gave, one, love the Lord with all your heart, your soul. And that's what we do when we do the bread and wine. We do remember him, thanking him and loving him for what his death, burial, resurrection, that gives us eternal salvation. We need to thank him and love him for that. But he also gave us a second commandment. You need to love thy neighbor as yourself. And this service, foot washing service, goes to that point. We'll have people tell us, though, but even you old Baptists will admit that's not a church ordinance. And really, wasn't that just a custom, a tradition that they did among the Jews? And there's some examples in the Bible that talk about washing of feet. Excuse me. If you go back with me to Genesis, the book of Genesis, those that have your Bible, Genesis chapter 18, verse 4, we have Abraham is entertaining his angels. Angels that came to Abraham, didn't recognize them initially, but three angels came to him, one of them whom I believe was the Christ at the time, and then two other angels. But when they visit Abraham, verse 4, Abraham talks to them as they come to his house, and he says, let a little water, I pray you, be fetched, and wash your feet, and rest yourselves under the tree. It's true, back in those days when people traveled, they traveled in sandals, whatever, and traveled dirty roads, and their feet got dirty, and it was really quite custom, common practice for them to wash their feet when they arrived at someone's house, just washing off the dust of the road. If you turn over to chapter 19 of Genesis, we have the Lot in the city of Sodom. Two angels came and visited Lot, beginning the first verse of 19, and there came two angels in Sodom at evening, and Lot sat at the gate of Sodom. And Lot, seeing them, rose up to meet them, and he bowed himself with his face toward the ground. And he said, behold now, my lords, turn in, I pray you, into your servant's house, and tarry all night, and wash your feet. And ye shall rise up early and go about your way. Lot also gives the opportunity for these angels visiting him to wash their feet, wash the dust off their feet. If you go here in further in Genesis in chapter 43, we have the story about Joseph asking his family to come down, and he asked them to his brothers to, who didn't know him, didn't recognize him. They had sold him into slavery as a youth. And he asked them to come back and bring Benjamin, and they do. They come back and bring Benjamin back to Egypt to see Joseph. And they came to the ruler of the house, ruler of Joseph's house, the steward, and Joseph had him bring him to his house. In verse 24, and the man, Joseph's housekeeper, brought them in, which was Joseph's brothers to them, into Joseph's house, and they gave them water, and they washed their feet, and he gave their asses provender. He fed their stock, and he gave them water to wash their feet. They'll point out those examples of the foot washing service, that was really a Jewish custom. I want to examine that, number one. If you notice, in each one of those cases, those men washed their own feet. It was just a matter of washing off their feet for cleansing purposes. Get the dirt off your feet. Number two, it was done by the men themselves. In some cases, it might have been done by the servants. In no case will you find where the king washed the feet of those who are supposed to be serving him, where the king washed the peasants' feet. And I think that's what you're going to see here, and I'll cover a couple other things here. It was just to generally clean their own feet. They washed them upon arrival. When they got there, they would wash them as soon as they arrived. It's like no different than your mother telling you before you eat, go wash your hands before you eat. And we know that the Jewish people, especially the priests, washed their hands a lot before they ate. Book of Mark tells us that the Jewish priests didn't eat unless they washed their hands a lot. But we see this, and he said, when he began to wash their feet and wipe them with the towel wherewith he was girded, and then he comes to Peter. He tells Peter this. Then he cometh to Peter and said, Peter, and Peter said unto him, Lord, dost thou wash my feet? Jesus answered and said unto him, What I do thou knowest not now, but thou shalt know hereafter. Peter, you don't know what I'm doing, but you'll know after this. And that's what I want to point out is one of the good examples about this was not a custom at the time, what was taking place here, because Peter was not aware of it. In fact, Peter was not only a Jew, but we had a room full of Jews, all the apostles who participated in this foot washing service. And that's who Jesus limited this service to, was his, the apostles in the church. And those apostles elsewhere were told that they were the first church. He first gave the church the apostles. They were the first church, and the Lord limited this foot washing service to those apostles. And that's why, again, we have one reason that we limit it to the members of the church. He said, Jesus had told him and says, What I do thou knowest not now, but thou shalt hereafter knowest. And Peter answered him and said, Thou shalt never wash my feet. Peter was not familiar with this situation at all. And Peter was not only a Jew, he was a devout Jew. If you jump over there to Acts chapter 10, we see that, you know, Peter had a dream in which the Lord dropped a sheet down full of unclean animals. Back in the Old Testament, between the clean and the unclean, there were animals they couldn't eat. Y'all familiar, they didn't eat anything pork, that type of thing. Anything that was an unclean animal they didn't eat of. But the Lord dropped this sheet in this vision down to Peter and told him, Peter, kill and eat. And Peter said, No, Lord, I've never eaten anything clean. Peter knew the Jewish traditions and the laws. He knew them well. In fact, this whole room full of Jews all knew it, and none of them knew what the Lord was doing here. This was not a custom because none of them knew what was going on. They had not seen anything like this. No time did the king, the head, come and wash the servant's feet. That's what we've got going on here. We don't have the servant washing the king's feet. We've got the king taking off his kingly garments, lowering himself down, and washing the feet of his disciples. This was not a custom because Peter was a devout Jew and didn't know what was going on. Neither did the other Jewish people in the room had seen him. If you keep in mind, if you go back just a couple of chapters, the book of John, chapter 11, we find that just recently, right before this happened, Mary had washed Jesus' feet, washed her feet with the tears of her eyes, wiped them with the hair on her head, and anointed his feet with this expensive ointment that there was some controversy about. They had just seen Mary basically wash and dry the Lord's feet, and this was not something that they were accustomed to either. So it wasn't a custom there taking place. They had just witnessed Mary doing it earlier when Mary and Martha had their little disagreement, Judas Iscariot disagreed on why are we spending the ointment that way. Been in the cost of ointment that way. So this was not a custom. They had witnessed this. They were familiar with all the Jewish customs. And yet, they didn't understand or know what Jesus was doing here. So Peter challenged him. And the Lord had told him, What I do, you know it's not now, but you shall know hereafter. We know now after the Lord gives us his example. Peter said unto him, Thou shalt never wash my feet. I'm not letting the king wash my feet. I'm a lowly servant of the king. And I'm not going to let that happen. I'm not going to let the king lower himself down to wash my feet. And Jesus answered him and said, if I wash thee not, thou hast no part with me. Pretty strong statement on his part. Peter got the message from Jesus. Simon Peter then saith unto him, Lord, not my feet only, but also my head and my hands. Give me a bath, Lord, if that's what it takes. I want a part of you. We need to have this same attitude when we approach this service. We want to have a part of Christ. And again, your eternal salvation has already been determined, so that's not what we're talking about here. But if you want to part with the Lord, then we do what he commands us to do. And number one, we do the wine and bread service, the communion service, in remembrance of him. And we wash the feet for the purpose that he's about to describe for us what we're doing it for here. If we want to have a part with him today in this world, and we follow this ordinance of communion and the ceremony of foot washing service as he's directed us to. Simon Peter said to him, then, Lord, not only my feet, only but my head and hands also. He said, wash all of me, Lord. Peter got the message and caught on. We ought to get the same message. Jesus said unto him, he that is washed needeth not save to wash his feet, but is clean every whit, and ye are all clean, but not all. And when Jesus says you are washed, he's not talking about a bath. He's not talking about you're clean. Keep in mind now, supper has already ended. Another thing that just hit me. Supper's already ended. And after it's over, then he's going about washing their feet. Another reason they didn't know this is because when they came to wash their feet or wash for a meal, they washed before the meal. They washed their feet when they arrived to get the dirt off. My estimation, an hour, hour and a half after they've all arrived, they've already had supper. That's when you wash before. That's when the traditions of the Jews was. They washed a lot as they ate. All that took place, any washing took place that was for purposes of cleanliness, took place much earlier in the meal, at the very start of the meal, at the very start of when they first arrived. That's not what's taking place here. And when he says here, he that is washed needeth not save to wash his feet. He's talking about the washing of regeneration there. Those of you that are children of God, born again, called, you've been subject to regeneration, you've been washed, you've been cleansed. That's what he's talking about here. You've been cleansed for your purposes of your sin, for your salvation. He said, if you've been washed that way, you need not wash your own feet, but is clean every whit. You are clean in a sense of righteousness before the Lord because of what Christ did for us only, not because of anything we've done. But he says, but not all of you are. For he knew who should betray him. Therefore, he said, ye are not all clean. So after he had washed their feet and had taken his garments, he's put his garments back on now, and he was set down again. He asked them again. Now, again, he's asking them, do you know what I've just done to you? Know ye what I have done to you? He knows they don't. You know, Jesus is not asking this question because he's wanting the answer. He already knows the answer, but he's wanting his disciples to understand it. He wants us to understand, too, what we're doing when we're doing this foot washing service. Do you know what I've done to you? Again, if it was a custom, they'd already known. They would all known. And he's already said up here, Peter, you don't know what I'm doing. The rest of you basically saying, y'all don't know what I've done either, but let me explain. You call me Master and Lord, and you say, well, for I am. I am your Lord and Master. He is the King of kings and the Lord of lords. And yet he bowed himself down to wash the feet of his disciples. If I then, your Lord and Master, have washed your feet, ye also ought to wash one another's feet. You also ought to wash one another's feet. Why is it then that we're one of the few groups, religious groups, that does this? If you say, you know, and you'll read about it and you'll hear it, and I heard it discussed on the radio about, well, that wasn't an ordinance. He didn't require it at all. And it's not really something that you need to do. If I take that position, then I'm interpreting this phrase, you ought not to do it. He said, you ought to do it. For if I have given you an example, where it says, if I, your Lord and Master, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. If I take the position that that's not required, then I'm saying, I'm interpreting this, you ought not to wash one another's feet. That doesn't make sense. We ought to do it. For I have given you an example that you should do as I have done to you. Verily, verily, I say unto you, the servant is not greater than his Lord. We understand that. Neither is he that is sent greater than he that sent him. He is the Lord and he and the Lord are on the same level. They're one. If ye know these things, happy are ye if ye do them. Not only are we supposed to do it, and we ought to do it. To me, that's a commandment. You ought to do it. If you, not only that, you'll be happy when you do it. You know, why did the Lord choose feet? Why didn't he choose the hands or the face? When he said, let's have this service, why don't we have it the hand-washing service or the feet-washing service? Why don't we wash our feet and wash our hands? Why didn't he pick that? Wouldn't that have been easier? Feet are an ugly part of the body. At least, you know, some of you ladies have nice feet. I'll give you credit. But mine are not. And I think the feet takes the most abuse. They must suffer. They're the ones that always are the first to start giving us trouble because they bear the entire weight of the body. You know, if the Lord had said, in my opinion, the Lord had said, wash your hands or wash your face, they'd all be doing it. Everybody would be doing it. They'd observe this service. They wouldn't have any difficulty observing this service if he'd have said, I want each of you to wash each other's hands. Excuse me, or wash each other's face. We'd all been doing it. The reason most people don't do it is the exact reason that Jesus chose the feet. I have to be willing to serve you to get down and wash somebody's dirty feet. Now, y'all know what I'm talking about. To get down and bow myself down to wash somebody's feet, I have to be doing it because the Lord told me to and because I'm trying to love my brother. I'm trying to let my brother know that I love you. I love you enough that I'm willing to stoop over and wash your feet. I'm willing to care for you. I'm willing to love you as much as I love myself. Because it's not in me. It's not in any of us. Most of the time, I don't want to go wash somebody else's feet. You know, I don't want to go wash them at all, but I could certainly wash their hands or their face or something else better. The very reason Jesus chose feet, I believe, is because that's the reason that most people don't do it. It's pride and it's humility. And we know the New Testament is full of how we ought to be humble, New Testament and Old Testament. If my people which are called by my name shall humble themselves and pray. It's the humility and pride that's built into each one of us. That's the reason the Lord gave us his foot washing services, to address our problems with pride and humility in this world. We all have a lot of pride. If you're different from me than if you don't. Most of us have a lot of pride, and sometimes we can't do the things that we ought to do to take the humble approach to life. We ought to humble ourselves and serve other people. Our first thought ought to be to serving other people. And that's what this ceremony here, this foot washing service, is all about. Learning to love our neighbor as we love ourselves. Learning to be willing to bow ourselves down and serve them. You know, we go see, and some of the people that I think do the best job in the world are the nurses and those caregivers who have to go in and care, especially for those elderly people, people who can't take care of themselves, because they have to do the most menial task for those people. That's what we're doing. You have to humble yourselves down. If you got too much pride, you can't take care of people like they ought to be taken care of. You've got to humble yourself down to wash somebody else's feet. And that's what this service is all about, is learning us. Number one, the communion service is so we remember him, because that's for the greatest commandment, love the Lord with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind. And then love thy neighbor as thyself. Our pride won't always let us do that. It's hard to love somebody else as much as we do ourselves. I don't know that I can do it. I don't know that I've ever done it, and I've failed in that regard. That's why he's given us his service, that we're reminded that that's the second greatest commandment, is to love our neighbor as ourselves. You know, it's pretty hard to hold a grudge against somebody when I look down. If I'm mad at Brother Kenny about something, and I look down and he's bent over on his knees washing my feet. Just something happens inside here when he does that. Something happens inside when I see my brethren around washing my feet. If something does something to me inside, makes me realize what the Lord would have us do when I bend over and wash the feet of someone else. You know, again, we're one of the few churches that observes this, but it's something that we ought to do. I believe we have a duty to do it. Not that it's eternal salvation is tied to it, but it is a duty that we have to do. And he says, when we do it, then we're going to be blessed. We're going to be happy and blessed. think I mentioned this before, 10 years ago, this example, I'll use that. We've got a little bit of a slim crowd this morning, nice crowd. I'm proud of every one of you that are here, but a little slim. We've had bigger crowds. We could get a crowd in this place if we'd advertise that Jesus is going to be here for our communion service. If Jesus is going to be here live, we could probably get four more people. There'd be a lot of people blow us off as crazy, but we'd get more people in here. If you had the opportunity to come and wash the feet of Jesus, would you do that? Would you take that opportunity? If I could establish you that Jesus will be here and you can come and wash his feet, would you do so? Well, what you do if you want to do that, if you want to wash the feet of Jesus, then come, and when you get ready to wash the feet, you pick out the person that is the most disabled, the most handicapped, the most one that can't care for themselves, the one that's the most troubled, that has the most problems. Because over in the 25th chapter of Matthew, Jesus tells us, insomuch as you have done this to the least of one of my people, then you have done it unto me. If you pick out the least person in your opinion, and a lot of us would qualify for that, but you know what I'm talking about. If you pick out the least person in the crowd, maybe someone you have troubles with, maybe someone you have difficulty with, maybe someone that has difficulties themselves, maybe, you know, someone who has incapacities of any form or fashion, mental or physical incapacities, and you pick them and you go wash their feet, Jesus says, when you do that service to people, you're doing it unto me. You're washing the feet of Jesus himself. He gives us these two beautiful examples of how we ought to, number one, love the Lord, and then also love thy neighbor. The communion service is so important, and we don't talk about it enough, but it is one that we ought to emphasize because, number one, the communion service, we do that in remembrance of him according to his specific instructions. This is the service that he told us to do to remember him for. Secondly, the feet washing service is what he has given us for each other so that we can learn how to treat each other, and so that we can help better treat our neighbor and love our neighbor as we love ourselves. I thank you for your kind attention. That's my thoughts on this, and my prayer is that Lord richly bless each of you. You have blessed me with your